Good morning. How many of you out there have ever been so certain that you know something and you find out that that's not the case? Anybody ever had that? And you just knew it. And there wasn't any doubt about it. And it later, sometimes it imprisoned us and it caused us a lot of angst and trouble with our relationships because we were so certain of our mistaken certainties. And a lot of times there's ego involvement in that because none of us likes to be shown up to be wrong. We'd rather do anything than change our minds sometimes. We'd rather just keep walking with it and go towards the place we're going instead of stopping and saying, you know what, I need to step back. I was wrong. And I'm going to recalibrate and recalculate my steps. The title that I took today comes from the wonderful Carpenter song, For All We Know, and also recorded by Dionne Warwick with Burt Bacharach. I believe he wrote it. But I decided to take that for the title because I realized that For All We Know, not being necessarily the romantic song that I want to talk about, it is really about what we all know individually and collectively. I think sometimes we're imprisoned by our notions, by what we think is right and what we know is absolutely true. And it can be different from one person to another. Haven't you ever seen somebody describe an accident or a family argument or any type of dissension and you say, this person said it was this way, I saw it that way, another person saw it this way, and we don't know what the truth is, and that makes us even more nervous, and then we start really coming at each other, and the original problem is lost in a miasma of opinion. But the knowledge, the event, the thing that happened remains. And so I think that anybody who is really interested in conflict resolution and being able to be a good communicator can step back and say, I see my part in this. I know where I may have misjudged, and I know where I may have projected my mistaken certainties in here. And I'm willing to be corrected. In religion, in spirituality, we don't talk about the need to be corrected. We talk about the need to see the truth. And the truth is different than the facts. Now, I'm not making a play on words here. I'm going to explain what I mean. 2 months ago, I was not feeling very well, and it was something just a little different going on, and I felt it, and I decided to go to the Methodist Minor Emergency Clinic in San Antonio. It's really a very nice one. I recommend it highly. And the doctor said, after listening to me, you have, I think, pneumonia. And I want to get chest x-rays to make sure. And they did, she did. And it was true, I had the beginning of pneumonia in the left lower lobe. And I remember that time as one that quick, she wanted antibiotics and do all those kinds of things and slow down. Now, I was very certain that I was taking care of myself and walking on and doing those things that had to be done by me. And I knew that I was drinking water, meditating, and I knew I was right. But the whole thing was, I was wrong. Because when the paper comes at the end and the doctor signs it and says you have atypical pneumonia and here's antibiotics, that's pretty, you know, right there. So the fact of the matter was, at that time, I did have something expressing as an inflammation here. That was a fact. But the truth is, I was, and you are, a whole, complete, and wonderful child of God. That's the truth about you. Otherwise, your body wouldn't seek restoration to heal when it gets sick. For instance, doctors used to want to get rid of a fever. because it was uncomfortable and people didn't like feeling it. I know I didn't like it. But now we realize that that's the body's way of burning up what needs to be released, what needs to be let go for our health. So sometimes that fever is necessary for our health. I like the idea that there is more homeopathic ideas that have come out in the last 20 and 30 years, and we're not just relying on allopathy alone, traditional medicine. However, I don't discourage allopathy. I've used it, and there are times that homeopathy has failed me, and there are times that allopathy has failed me. But I go inside, and one thing that's never failed me, and I think you might be able to say the same thing, is if you realize that the situation that you're going through came to pass, not to stay, and two, that you remember that while it's a fact at this moment that you are expressing whatever it may be, a pneumonia or a problem or an issue, or just go on down the line with it, the truth is always there. It's always ready to be recognized if we can get our own precious darling opinions out of the way, admit that we may have been wrong, and not let that throw us about living from here on out. In other words, we could be right about a lot of things and know it, but let us be wrong and we really walk and embrace that. It seems like, and I've said this before, human nature is such that we bite down on a sore tooth sometimes because it hurts so good. Or we play with a fingernail that's, you know, hangnail because it kind of hurts so good. We have this perversity in us that comes from our humanity. And what we're always doing in truth is trying to walk upwards and accept more. Not begging a reticent God for blessings that are not, but recognizing the blessings that are at hand. That you don't have to beg or plead with God for any good thing because, as Scripture says, it is His good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And what does your kingdom look like? And what did Jesus mean? And I'd like to talk about that today. It says, seek you first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you. In other words, material, financial, emotional, any of these things that express as desire in you. Sometimes we don't know what's good for us and we ask amiss. And we're happy that we didn't get what we asked for. I know I have been. I wanted a particular car more than anything else. And I knew mechanics and I knew all the things that had to do with it that were attendant to it. But there was something inside me that said, this isn't right. But it was so perfect otherwise that I just said, you know, I'll get through that. And I'm glad I didn't, because it was pointed out to me by somebody who had a rack that I didn't have and could look under it that the rear main seal was broken. And it was at least $1,000 more had I bought that car. I was so sure that I knew mechanics because I'd done so much of that, but I couldn't get under it. And at that particular time, it wasn't dripping, as those problems with rear main seals will do. I'm so glad that what I knew, I didn't act on. I was certain that it was the right thing, except for that little voice in me that said, this isn't quite what it should be. And I think that we, and our desire to have things go the way we want to, sometimes don't pay attention to that still small voice. I call that, and I believe it is, the voice of Spirit, the voice of God, leading you to your higher good. Sometimes your higher good is not what you want. For all you know, for all you think, it may not be what's best for you. That's why meditation, contemplation, visualization, prayer, whatever you want to call it, sitting in the silence, is so necessary, because at that moment you're able to empty yourself of your ego. And I know ego gets a bad rap in metaphysics, but I speak of it as the combined collective opinions that we have that make our world make sense to us. So if you can drop that in that meditative time and that contemplative time, then you're open to the new promptings of spirit. I know that for myself, when I knew that I knew the computer and that I knew that I was proficient in hypertext markup language, I would do something and I would talk to an inanimate screen. And what's worse is I would answer myself. I was so sure that it was right, but the thing kept saying on the screen, "You're wrong." And I realized I was impatient with the process. I didn't really want to learn it. And the process is sometimes so important, and most times so important, because it takes us from where we are to where we want to be, which leads to the other point about something that we all know. It's been said that there is no way to happiness. I agree with that. Happiness is the way. So, in other words, when I am frustrated in front of that screen, or I am frustrated in traffic, or the cats do something I wish they didn't, I realize that that's part and parcel of a life well lived. That is now, that is what's present, that's what's being presented to me, and I make the best of that time that frustrates me. And I realize these facts that bother me right now are going to become precious memories someday. And I know that because I've seen it. The mundane, the banal, the things that I have said many times, I just don't want to go through it and don't care. When I go forward and I look back, it's so precious that I wish I could go back and do it again. It's the everyday things sometimes. It's those things that light us up and we don't even know we're being lit up until we look at it in retrospect. So the differentiation between facts and truth, I would like to tell you, would be this. The truth is you are always a beloved child of a Father, Mother God, who loves you so much that you're here to express and learn and be an aperture of God's eyes. In other words, God experiences itself through you. And the things that you can do that can hinder that is to add your own opinion to something you're going through. Now, I'm not saying that we just walk through life with not, we accept this, we don't like that, and no, I'm saying that we remember that these things that are in front of us are put here for our growth, and that if we are prayed up, meditated up, if we're coming from the best place we can inside, then either we'll see those lessons and be thankful for them, or we will transcend the need to even go through it. Sometimes satori, enlightenment, can happen very quickly. I remember a football player that I really enjoyed. His name was Andre Rison. He played for Atlanta Falcons. And I loved his show-off ability. They called him Prime Time. I mean, he would go to that end zone and dance and make the touchdown and do all that stuff that I thought was so cool. But he got the ring, Super Bowl ring at that particular time, and he went to the Flint River in Georgia. And he took that ring off and threw it in the river. And he said that on television, the first thing I thought of is, I want to get to the Flint River and see what I can find. I would have loved to own a Super Bowl ring. But then I listened to why and the what fors that made him do that. It was a moment that said to him, I'm not interested even in the material things that got me to where I am. I am literally throwing a part of my life away that represented a great deal of success that really wasn't. And by the symbolic act of throwing that ring in the river, and it still hurts for me to say it, he made a new start. He changed at that moment. Satori happened. And what's interesting is to follow that man to this day, and that was some 16, 17 years ago, he lives his truth. That moment was a flashpoint. That was a time of enlightenment for him. See, sometimes we think enlightenment comes when we're crossing our legs and we're looking down and we're ascetic and we're giving up everything and all that. No, everyday enlightenment. If anybody ever read Thaddeus Golis, The Lazy Man's Guide to Enlightenment, knows that things, events can trigger this enlightenment, and it can happen very quickly. Sometimes we choose and need to go through things to help us get there. There's no right or wrong way to do this. It is what's right for you, what resonates with you. And I believe that my job is to bring that forth or to place a question in your mind or about an idea that could help lead to your transformation. It's been said that most people want to be transformed, but they don't want to be inconvenienced. And transformation is sometimes inconvenient. Bill King transformed. My father transformed. It was inconvenient for me to see it. It was inconvenient for all of us to see it, and it was certainly inconvenient for them to go through. But I also have seen a butterfly break out of a chrysalis. I've seen that, and I've seen the struggle and the push, and it looks like you want to do everything you can to help them. But if you get in the way, you kill them. But that struggle, that push, that coming out, and that freedom is part of the necessity of life. And though we don't understand all the time why some people have to be taken from us early or late or in the middle, we don't know. But we can trust that there is something higher at work here. And the reason we can do that is because we've done that up till now without knowing it. So I'm challenging you to be present in your life. You're here because you made the decision to believe in you, and you keep going. Sometimes you say, well, I don't like it, and it's tiresome, and it's boring, but you're still here. And as long as you're here, there is a purpose for you. Here is a test to find out whether your mission on life in life is finished, as Richard Bach said. If you're here, it's not. You're needed. You're necessary. And the best way to become happy with that, the best way to feel that the process is worthwhile to you, is to release as many of the shoulds and the coulds and the woulds that you may have accumulated. That you become the best ally to yourself, because the truth about you is that God sees you at your best. Jesus saw everybody that came to him at their best. It wasn't a question of, what did you do? How did you get this way? It was, take up your bed and walk. Rise and be healed. Go forward into new life. Not one place in the New Testament do I find Christ Jesus talking about the situation that the person was in and that they should feel guilt about it. It was always right now, from this point forward, we have new life. Satori for that person, maybe. So you see, this instant enlightenment that I'm talking about, while it's wonderful and can feel great, not all of us can go through this for all we know. Sometimes it's a process of unlearning. Sometimes we have to unlearn our precious opinions. We have to unlearn what we heard somebody else say to us who had a vested interest in keeping us controlled for their own good. It's been said we are all victims of victims. It's been said that we listen to other people far more than we listen to the still small voice inside. And if we listened to the still small voice inside, if we paid heed to that more, I believe that we would have a larger group of self-actualized, self-realized individuals that were living by the truth of their being and what was to them everything, rather than going through it by rote and living one day 365 times a year. I would rather take those days and make them new and different. If I can't make them different, I find a way to enjoy them. So I can maybe push this down and say, if you can't enjoy this moment, use it. Use it for your upliftment, advancement, and growth. And know that you may not be going through it for something inside you. You may be going through it because somebody down the line is going to need to hear what you did, what you went through, and how you overcame. So it's not that we are our brother's keepers. It is we are our brother's keepers through the oneness that we all are. It's just, do we recognize it? Do we access it? Do we look at the apparent situation and take steps more into that situation to see what it really meant, how it may have been created by us, for our learning, for somebody else's learning, whatever it may be, keeping your spiritual compass at North Star, always pointing that way, which is through forgiveness of yourself and forgiveness of others. In fact, I find it's better not to blame in the first place. If somebody says to me, I don't like the way you do this, or somebody is strident with me, I'm going to look inside and see if that's true. It may be true. And you know what? If it upsets me, it generally is. If it's something that I feel that, well, I don't do that, and then somebody says I did that, and I get very huffy and stiff, it's pretty sure I do it. But if it doesn't resonate, then I can let it go and realize that that's a reflection of that person's consciousness or the need to criticize or at least to instruct. Life is a huge place to learn. To me, this is our playground. Earl Nightingale called it our holiday on earth. And what are we going to do to make the most of it? And I agree very much with Thoreau, who said the unexamined life is not worth living. We can examine our motives. We can examine for all we know, for all the things we think are true. We can begin right now by throwing our metaphysical ring in the river and saying, I'm willing to be made new. I'm willing to give up what I thought was right, to embrace what I may not know, but feel very strongly led to do inside. Don't you know that we love those who have walked outside the lines? Artists, politicians, the writers. They heard their own music and they walked to it. They paid the price, but they won. Through the years, there were men and women who took first steps down new roads armed with nothing but their vision. And they suffered for it. And it was later that we honored them for their gift. It said, a prophet is without honor in their own country. Look at Edgar Casey. Look at those who open new doors. The sleeping prophet. Look at Emmett Fox. Look at the founders of Unity. Those who went against the orthodoxy of their time. Those who went against for all the others knew and listened to their lights and gave us the gifts we love today. Somebody out there today is about to give us a gift that all of us are going to cherish and love. At least, let's not get in their way. Let's make a place that is safe to create and walk outside the lines. I've said before, I don't like relationships that are built on control. I would much rather a person be true to their lights and do something that I may not approve of in my own human way, and be authentic. As long as they're kind, I pretty much don't have a problem with what it is. That's just how I gauge it. That's my barometer. And through it all, as I give up my judgments about what should be and how it should be, I feel lighter. So realize this, if you're afraid to step into the moment of Satori, if you're afraid to reach out towards the newness of life, it's because you have a lot of opinions about yourself and everybody else. And sometimes it feels real scary to let those go. The for all you know, and that you're so sure of, and that you're so sure is right, may be precisely the thing you have to let go of in order to walk into this new life. It was promised by Christ Jesus. It's promised by every wonderful spiritual teacher we've seen. The Buddha spoke of it. Muhammad spoke of it. The transcendentalists of last century spoke of it. It was always about recreation. And look at the world you live in. Spring, summer, winter, fall, night, day, repeating, replicating, reproducing through the divine life force that Ernest Holmes spoke of as divine libido. It is the essence, the life force that wants to continue to propagate and reproduce. You want to do that too. And the reason that I know that is because you're here. If you were finished growing, if you had placed a period, then you wouldn't care about transformation. You wouldn't care about newness of life. You wouldn't want to be a part of what we all are here. You see, for all we know in this place, we know love. This church I call an oasis of love in the foothills of the Texas Hill Country. What a nice tagline, but it's true. And I want to see that love expand throughout these doors. So I am asking people who are experts in their field to help us with that. We have a music coordinator. We now have a webmaster. We have events. We're on the cusp. It can happen. And all that we can do is shine the light of love, and we're going to attract like-minded people. It always begins here before it's here. So if we're living our truth, and if we're honoring the best intention inside us, and giving up the for all we knows, those things that I think imprison and hold us back, because it feels safe to be back there. If we can release that and step into this greatness that is Spirit's promise, then we expand first here. And that's the way, to me, the best way to grow. You can grow by fearing people to death. You can say, if you're not with us, you're not right, and you're out. That is born of fear and control. But in unity, we say, come be with us, join us, grow with us, and be all you can be. Friends, the world needs that right now. In a world, as E.E. Cummings said, that's doing its best night and day to make you like everybody else, means to fight the greatest fight you ever will fight and never give up. So when you're true to your highest and best, you show it. You're happier. And happy people help make happy people. Happy congregations attract happy people, and they grow. And they live and move in a way that touches everybody more tangibly than, say, giving something. We're giving of ourselves. We're giving of the light we are. And it may move us to want to give something tangibly, but first, we are the change we wish to be. That works in your life and mine. See it and believe it. Be the change here that you wish to be out here. It flows that way. And when you flow, you're not going to fight. Flowing is trusting the process, the Tao. Knowing that in a way that we can understand, this has all already happened. We invented time so it all wouldn't happen at once. So you see, the plan is there. God has this covered. And all we've got to do is trust that. And when you believe in yourself and trust yourself, you're believing and trusting in the God who made you. I send you great wishes this week that you're able to release that which is not for your highest good, and that for all you know, transformation's around the corner. All it takes is a decision. Make the decision in favor of yourself. I give thanks for all of you, and it's absolutely wonderful to be with you. And it is so.